This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting live worldwide to the world. Great to be with you. And I tell you, my last article about the Iranian president's comments in Spiegel has really received a lot of attention from a lot of people all over the world. And the most common response I've gotten is that people tell me that it's one of the best introductions to the Holocaust issue and controversy that they've ever read. Again, there's nothing in that article where I blatantly deny, as they say, or contest the Holocaust. But what I do is I offer information to people from the Holocaust industry itself and let them come to their own conclusions about how this tragic period of history has been so distorted by the Holocaust industry. And of course, it's been used for political purposes. One day in my program, we will talk about how the Holocaust has been used for political purposes, mainly the support of the Israeli state and the covering up of the crimes that have been committed against the Palestinian people and other peoples for that matter. It basically makes Jewish wrongdoing immune from criticism. I talked earlier in the other program about how we so closely associate organized crime in the United States and around the world with the Italians. We can't even hear Italian music without thinking reflexively about the Godfather or the Mafia and this kind of activity. Even Italian food evokes that kind of image. In fact, some commercials to make people remember their food, some commercials even today, will evoke a Godfather or a criminal aspect to their Italian pizza. Like Godfather Pizza is a perfect example. And there's many other examples of that. Or they'll do a commercial and allude to that. It's extremely common, ladies and gentlemen, and it's something that was truly manufactured by Hollywood, because by no means has all organized crime, or even most of it, has not even been Italian. Even during the heyday of Italian gangsters, there was a huge Jewish syndicate. The biggest organized crime operation in the United States in the early part of the 20th century, in the early 1900s, was in fact an organization called Murder Incorporated, which the famous Thomas Dewey of New York broke up. Thomas Dewey was later, of course, a candidate for president. And this was one of the most bloodthirsty organizations ever in American history. They used to kill people for profit, murder people slowly and torturously with ice picks. And from Murder Incorporated, many of the leading gangsters of America emerged, including Meyer Lansky, who, by all accounts, by all studies, was certainly the biggest gangster of the United States of America of the 20th century. But that's certainly not the image you get from Hollywood, is it? And who controls Hollywood? Take a look at the major studios in Hollywood, the major entertainment giants. Find out who owns them. Who are the overwhelming number of directors, producers, writers, and the people who are making decisions about themes and movies? Who controls so much of the book industry, of magazine industry? So at the same time, the Italians have been labeled as gangsters. Jews who have been involved in organized crime, not simply in the 20th century, but literally since the time of Christ. I mean, even Martin Luther wrote a book, or actually edited a book. He didn't write it. He edited a book on called A Criminal's Lexicon, which is a book of the terms and the language, the terminology that criminals used in what was then these German states in the middle of Europe back in the Middle Ages. And the terms, he points out, in fact, are almost all Yiddish. They're all Jewish derivatives and Hebrew derivatives. because of their incredible involvement in these kinds of activities. I pointed out before how the oligarchs, these terrible organized criminals who own now 65% of the Russian nation, basically they got it through extortion, murder, theft, the greatest thievery of all time. And by the way, they get away with this in the world's media. You read some articles like in Fortune magazine that talks about their criminality, but they get away with this. And in fact, many of these Russian mobsters who've killed people like Berezovsky and extorted people and extorted billions of dollars worth of property from the Russian people, they are defended in the West. Khodorkovsky is a perfect example. Here's a criminal who was sentenced to 9 years in prison, and the West acted like it was a great crime against humanity, and this was an anti-Semitic act, and all over the world, the media rushed to Khodorkovsky's defense and condemned Putin and said this was an attack against business. It wasn't an attack against business. Khodorkovsky didn't deserve 9 years. He deserved 9,000 years for his terrible crimes against the Russian people. He stole $300 billion worth of Russian resources at a time when the Russian people are still in economically very bad shape, economic bad shape. The average salary in Russia is still about $300 or $400 a month, and it's a little better in Moscow and St. Petersburg, but in some of these smaller areas, it's very bad. And there's a lot of children who don't get enough to eat, who have signs of malnutrition, who don't get proper medical care, as the old system that the Soviets had has broken down. And when you have somebody steal this kind of quantity of value from the Russian people, it has enormous consequences. And not only did they steal this money, the money wasn't simply stolen and then spent in Russia on things. Most of the money, or a great deal of the money, was spent outside of the country. They spirited it outside of the country to Swiss banks and the banks in Israel. In fact, most of the leaders of the major oil company that Khodorkovsky was in charge of are now in Israel. Israel, in fact, has a television show called The Oligarchs, which is about the Jewish oligarchs in Russia who are fabulously wealthy, and it's kind of like a situation comedy. Ha, ha, ha. You know, they stole all these billions and billions and billions of dollars, trillions even, from the Russian people, and that's it's like, oh, that's fine. But we don't have the connection in America with organized crime because we have this control. So, you know, I've got a lot of people out there who read my article and said, this is interesting. Look how in their control of the media, this is like they've controlled the organized crime issue, they've controlled the discussion of the Holocaust. No one denies that there were atrocities that were committed against Jewish people and that many innocent Jews died in that conflict. And no one also denies that many non-Jews died in the conflict. 64 million people died in that war. And there were atrocities on all sides, definitely, obviously. But we don't hear about that. We don't hear about the greatest mass murder of all time, which consisted of what happened with the Cheka and the early Bolsheviks and the Gulags, where tens of millions of people died, or the Great Famine, the forced famine and murder that occurred in the Ukraine, where somewhere between 6 and 10 million people perished. By itself, that equals the Jewish Holocaust, but it's not on the front pages of the paper every day. It's not in your movies and in your magazine articles. There are no tears crying for those victims. We have taken individual Jewish victims like Anne Frank, who, by the way, died of typhus. She wasn't gassed, and yet she was at Auschwitz. And by the way, the most famous hero of the Holocaust, you know, is Elie Wiesel. He's like the Nobel Prize-winning most respected man. He was at Auschwitz as well as his father. And guess what? Neither of these people died. Neither of these individuals, were gassed, at least gassed by the Germans. The father did die eventually from the effects of privation. And ladies and gentlemen, we had an incredible bombing campaign. That's another good example. You know, is it somehow a war crime, an atrocity, to supposedly gas someone or to kill someone or shoot someone? Is it not just as terrible an atrocity to burn alive men, women, and children in their homes, to burn alive babies in their cribs, mothers nursing in their living room with their 4 and 5 and 6 year old children, and yet that was literally the policy of England and the Allies during the war, was to attack the German population. And that policy, by the way, was not an effective war policy. German production went up at the war because we were busy bombing the men, women, and children purposefully rather than the factories. Now, this is a fact, and this is one more interesting aspect of history that you can go into if you'd like to. So we really don't get the picture of the war. I just read some articles today how the Jewish groups were protesting the Pope's visit to Auschwitz, that he wasn't genuflecting enough to them, and yet he was very... I mean, he focused on Auschwitz. He didn't focus on the terrible atrocities and murders that took place against the Polish citizens by the Bolsheviks. You know, he's not going to go to Eastern Europe, to Latvia, and talk about those incredible crimes. And those Bolsheviks, by the way, that did these terrible crimes were very much led by Jewish extremists. There's no doubt about that. Bolshevism itself, and again, I know I'm challenging a lot of people listening, and I'm saying that, you know, they must think I'm really nuts, really crazy to say that Bolshevism was led by Jews, but ladies and gentlemen, I can prove it. I just saw a publication just the other day that which was drawn from the head of the London Times, one of the most prestigious newspapers in the world, who was in Russia for many years, and he drew an absolute picture, a sketch of all the a statistical sketch of every member of one of the first Bolshevik governments. And out of many hundreds of Bolsheviks, most of them, by far, most of them were Jews, and very few were Russians at all. Lenin was half Jewish. Trotsky, of course, was a Jew. Kamenev was Jewish. Sverdlov was Jewish. Most of the leadership of the early Bolshevik movement were Jews, and they committed terrible atrocities against the intelligentsia, against the church, against the Christian church in Russia. I remember even till the 1950s, you had Kaganovich, who was the deputy premier of Russia, who was Jewish, and he tore down what we call the Church of the Savior today in Russia, one of the most beautiful cathedrals, old cathedrals in Russia, tore it down and built a swimming pool. And when he did so, he said, "There's Mother Russia stripped of her skirts." Now, does that sound like a Russian patriot to you, or a Russian person? Would a Russian person say this? There's Mother Russia. He wasn't Russian, ladies and gentlemen, just like the Russian mafia is not Russian. But again, you're not allowed to know that. That's not in the popular genre. That's not the popular message of the media. I want to quote to you from another article on, and this was posted by Mathaba. And I want to quote to you an article that concerns the Spiegel magazine piece that was written. And this is what is written here. This was written on the 1st of June. "The first cracks in the political and legal edifice to protect the Holocaust industry from criticism have started to appear and are likely to widen over time. The German magazine Der Spiegel has landed a major coup in its latest edition, not for doing a rare exclusive interview with the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad, but for allowing him to express views which have resulted in a lengthy prison sentence. They have stated by a German national. It is not clear whether this was the intention of Der Spiegel, which in an editorial distanced itself from the remarks by the Iranian president, but the publication will have been as decisive a step towards scrapping the thought crime laws dating from the period of Allied occupation as the publication of Crab Walk by the famous German author Günther Grass a few years ago. Grass's book was the first to break the taboo of talking about Germans and Germany in other terms than those of the evil perpetrators when dealing with the Second World War. He highlighted those other losses and gave German reasons the sense that they too had been victimized by those events. Discussing the Holocaust and the shadow it cast over Germany and generations of Germans, however, remained taboo, and German citizens would not only be punished for, quote, defaming the memory of the dead, unquote, but even for not balancing any remarks casting doubt on the official Holocaust dogma with the usual mantra of the eternal victimization by Jews, who were thereby absolved from any culpability for whatever they have done or might do to anybody else. In 1997, for example, a German court found Udo Walendi guilty for not knowingly publishing lies, but for publishing a one-sided account of history and not giving, quote, sufficient attention to alternative interpretations. Now imagine someone being found guilty and being punished with prison for publishing a one-sided account of history. In other words, giving their own views on an historical interpretation. It's insane. I mean, that there's no freedom when someone can be prosecuted like that. That's my commentary. He was charged of having, on a very scholarly historical basis, published quotations and facts that contradicted, quote, in many specific points, the accepted version of German guilt for the Holocaust and the National Socialist crimes, unquote. Freedom of speech for Walendi, Deckard, Tobin, Rudolph, and Zundel, it comes at the price of several years in prison. So Der Spiegel filled several pages with a rebuttal of what the Iranian president had to say, but it allowed him to question the veracity of the official Holocaust version. Let him get away with saying that if the Holocaust happened as claimed and Germans or Europeans were collectively guilty, then Israelis should be repatriated to Europe, not the Middle East. And if it wasn't true, then there was even less justification for the Palestinians to suffer occupation and injustice at their hands. The Iranian president was even allowed to challenge the anachronistic situation where scientific research into the Holocaust is punishable by prison under German law, should it result in findings unfavorable or objectionable by the Jewish lobby. And he was given permission to say that young generations of Germans should not be made to feel guilty for whatever their great-grandparents might have done, and that Germans should stop allowing themselves to be humiliated, which of course they are every day in the media and around the world, by the Zionists after having paid reparations for decades. So there has been condemnation of the Iranian president, who performed infinitely better in this interview than the lengthy letter to the American president. But no threat of legal action came against Der Spiegel. If this publication interview remains unchallenged in the courts, then it should now be permissible in Germany to report the views of Holocaust revisionists. As long as the revisionists themselves are not German, no charges could be brought. Germans hitherto forbidden from discussing these issues might now do so simply by quoting what others have said without adding their own opinion or judgment. The first cracks in the political and legal edifice to protect the Holocaust industry from criticism have started to appear and are likely to widen over time. Absolutely. And all we can do is hope that we'll have more freedom of speech in Germany and in Europe and for our people. And as I've said so many times, freedom of speech is the most critical freedom, because when you don't have freedom of speech, you don't really even know when terrible crimes are being committed against your people, or even genocide. You have to have the right to have a free press. And as much as the West talks about freedom, for instance, the condemnation of the Middle East and the Arab kingdoms for their lack of freedom of speech in certain political issues, we in America and in Europe have very little free speech. Yes, in America we can stand up on a street corner and publish a pamphlet, you know, but again, in competition against the Hollywood industry, no one could do a movie with a different view of the Jewish role of organized crime, or suggest that Jews should be collectively guilty for organized crime, or collectively guilty because the Jewish community around the world supported the establishment of Bolshevism and the resulting tens of millions of dead that came from that, or the terrible atrocities and murders against the Palestinian people with the establishment of Israel and the ethnic cleansing that came about, or even, for instance, the genocide boasted about in the Torah. The genocide boasted against whole peoples where men, women, children, even their animals, even their pets were murdered purposefully. So there's a tremendous double standard, ladies and gentlemen, and one of the jobs that I think that I have, and one of the most effective and most important jobs that I have, is to show these hypocrisies, to illustrate them, to expose them, and through exposing those hypocrisies, I think we can lead people to what the underlying truth is. I don't tell people that they should believe everything I say. I say believe nothing that I say, but also don't believe anything the media says. But read and study both sides, and then have the courage and the intelligence to make your own decisions about these issues. Don't enter these things lightly. Now, when you read my book, Jewish Supremacism, check out the footnotes. Think about what I say. You can read the other side, it's no problem. But see, the other side doesn't even confront what I say because they can't confront what I say effectively. The truth's just not there. I mean, I have a lot of people say you're a great debater, you know, that you win your debates and your articles are so very convincing, you're a great writer. I don't think I'm such a great writer and I'm not such a great debater. But the great advantage that I have and all of us have in this cause is that we have the truth on our side. We have the facts on our side. All we have to do is learn how to present them decently and intelligently and effectively, sometimes creatively and sometimes in an entertaining fashion for that matter, and a very good audiovisual fashion, as well as a well-written fashion that enables people to see and to sense the humanity that we have in our position, that we are not the supremacists or the haters or the bigots that as we are represented by our opponents. The truth is they are the greatest fomenters of hatred and bigotry and murder the world has ever seen. And when I say that, I'm not saying all Jews, but I'm saying these extremist Jews who have controlled Israel, who have helped foment the Second World War. In 1933, they declared war on Germany. Now, look at the lives that were caused and affected by that. Even in the First World War, the Jewish community in America worked very hard to get America into that war in exchange for the British putting out the Balfour Declaration and supporting the establishment of Israel. Now, that's all facts of history, and a lot of those documentations are in my book, Jewish Supremacism. I hope all of you have read that book yet, and I hope that many of you will buy the book and spread it to your friends. We have only a few copies left of this edition, and I'm trying to raise the money now to do a new edition, and we need some support. I also want to mention to you that one of my good supporters a long time ago, in fact, he was an official, believe it or not, in the judiciary, and he left a bit of support for me, and it's just in his will, and it's not a great amount, but it's certainly going to be a help. And those of you out there, a lot of you who really want to help the cause, one of the easiest things you can do, and one of the most effective things you can do, is include us in your will and make sure your will is drawn up by an attorney, because I can tell you, it can get controversial. But a lot of you will not do much, you know, while you're alive. You won't spend that much money. But even when you're gone, your legacy can go on. You can continue to support this cause, and so I hope some of you thinking about that. You know, for years, even from the time I began in this cause, I've always kept a lot of life insurance, a high life insurance policy. Well, I think it makes sense for a man in my position. And let me tell you something, and I think it's also good for my own safety in some ways in terms of our opponents out there, but I've bequeathed in that policy a lot of money to activists and leaders for our cause, you know, in this country and around the world. And that's one thing that I've done. And in your insurance policies, it's very easy to designate a beneficiary. And that's one way that you can help us that takes nothing out. It doesn't affect your living standard at all. I think all of you should contribute, obviously, healthily to the cause. But that doesn't even affect your living standard. But my gosh, that's a big help for what we're doing. And after you're gone, and I think a lot of you care. The reason why that you're involved in this movement is that you care what's going on in the world. And this enables that care to proceed beyond yourself. And in the future, you know, you'll certainly be recognized and you'll be remembered by those who are carrying this fight to the enemy, who are carrying this fight for our preservation, for our heritage, for our freedom. Look, it's been great being with you. I look forward to being with you again on Monday. I hope that you enjoy Bob Whitaker over the weekend. And I'm looking forward again to sharing with you more news, more viewpoints, more analysis on Monday. So please tune in, take this message, use your computers, because we've got to do this work. It's so vital, and this work completely depends upon what you do and people like you. Thanks so much. I'll see you on Monday. This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddude.com.